The following episode of The Projection Booth is brought to you by Diabolik DVD. Specializing in horror, cult, and other oddities on DVD and Blu-ray, please visit www.diabolikdvd.com.
Support for The Projection Booth podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio. Now podcast listeners can access the latest episodes of The Projection Booth and thousands of other podcasts on the go without downloading or syncing. Stitcher instantly delivers episodes of your favorite shows to your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio can be found in the iPhone and Android app stores or on the web at stitcher.com/booth.
O que é a vida? É o princípio da morte. O que é a morte? É o fim da vida. O que é a existência? É a continuidade do sangue. O que é o sangue? É a razão da existência.
Before Coffin Joe, did Brazil have a history of horror films, or was he kind of breaking new ground?
No, Brazil never had a history of horror films, not even genre films. I mean, I always joke with him, you know, because he's been doing films since the 50s, so he is contemporary to dozens of Brazilian movie styles or genres or movements. But he's only a contemporary. He was never part of any of them, those, you know, because he always did films independently, and his films were very different from every film that was done in Brazil. Brazil is the biggest Catholic country in the world, you know, and it is. I mean, if you watch At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul today, you're kind of shocked by how blasphemous it is. I mean, there's a scene where the guy takes the crown of thorns from a Christ figure and hits yet some other guy in the face with it, you know, like torturing this poor soul with Christ's crown of thorns. I mean, it's such a blasphemous image, and the guy shot that in 1964. I mean, you have to give it to him. I mean, he probably had no idea what he was doing, you know. and the films were a huge success in Brazil, but at the same time they were repelled by the censorship board, you know, which always cut them and made Mujica cut several of his films. I mean, a lot of them weren't seen in Brazil in original format until the 90s, really, you know. But to answer your question, no, I mean, he is semi-illiterate, you know, still. He never went to, I mean, he went to school for 4 or 5 years, but he quit school as soon as he started doing his amateur films. So he still has a lot of difficulty writing. He never read a book about filmmaking, but at the same time, he has a very intuitive style, and he knows a lot about movie making by watching films. And it's amazing to talk to him because he can recall a scene he saw in a film in 1948. He can't remember the name of the film or the name of the director, but he can tell you exactly what the scene looked like and what the camera did and the angles and how it was lighted. So it is, I think he is the proof that there is such thing as primitive cinema. You know, a lot of people say that, well, cinema is the movie making is the most expensive art form ever. I mean, it is really expensive to do a film. And to do a film, you need to have notions of drama and notions of photography. To be a good director, right, you need to know a lot about drama and a lot about photography and a lot about editing. And you need a technical knowledge, and you need to know how a scene is, if you shoot a scene one way, how it will look. And he learned that only by watching films and by doing them, which I think is just absolutely amazing. I mean, you can have any you can talk to him about movie making as much as you want. He won't be able to quote any director or any name of any film, you know, but he'll be able to remember a scene he saw 60 years ago. That to me is amazing.
You talked about At Midnight and that first film and all the different things that are in it in that way, and it is very blasphemous, you know, obviously to the audience at the time. And you said the biggest Catholic country in the world, at least in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
You know, where were these ideas coming from for him? I mean, was he sort of, because it seems like his character is an atheist, his character is a non-believer. Is he himself that way, or is he ridiculing that? Or, I mean, where does he sort of fit in between his own personal ethics and beliefs versus how he developed the character?
Well, that is a question that I've been asking myself since I met him in 1986. I don't know where his films came from. I don't think he knows, you know. That is the mystery. I mean, I really think that he is an intuitive filmmaker. I really believe he has some sort of... he is kind of like possessed on a movie set, because he is one of the nicest guys in real life, one of the nicest guys I've ever met, has 7 children, was married several times, has a lot of friends. In 26 years, I never saw him get mad with anyone. You know, I've never seen him a shout at anyone or fight with anyone. He's just the most easygoing guy I've ever met. And at the same time, and he's really small, he's short, you know, in the films he looks like he's a huge character, you know. He used to be very thin, now he's a little fatter, he's almost 80. But he is an imposing figure on screen where he totally changes, you know. It's kind of a metamorphosis. It's really frightening, really scary to see. I honestly don't know where the films came from. I'm glad they're here. But it is useless to talk to him about the meaning of the films, because he'll say that it's something that came to him at the time, you know. I've never had like a philosophical discussion with Mujica about the films, because he says, and rightly so, that everything he wants to say are in the films themselves, you know? And it is weird for me. I still don't know if the films are anti-Catholic or if they are Catholic, because in the end of the first film, Coffin Joe is kind of defeated. You know, in some of the films, you don't know if he wanted to do, if the ending is supposed to be ironic or not, you know. I prefer to enjoy the films for what they are, you know. I think they are really questioning everything, and I don't think they have a position that is unilateral, you know. I don't think he chooses sides. I think he's just throwing people's fears and beliefs and at their faces and telling them, just think about this, you know. Do you really believe in this? If you do, okay. If you don't, it's okay too, you know. And I think that is the beauty of the films, and a lot of people don't understand that. They tell him, oh, you're anti-Catholic, these films should be banned. But in several of the films, I mean, the message is, in the end, I mean, Coffin Joe is defeated. In some of the other films, in one of the films, The Strange World of Coffin Joe, the censorship board told him to kill Coffin Joe in the end. You know, Coffin Joe wouldn't be dead at the end of that film if it was for him. In another film, he had to include scenes of explosions, pretending that Coffin Joe died. You know, at the end of Strange World of Coffin Joe, the censorship board told him to kill the character in the end. So what he did was he stole some scenes from a Turkish film with Omar Sharif. Not a Turkish, sorry. I can't remember if it was Greek or Turkish film with Omar Sharif. And he just added some explosions and some lettering in the end explaining that Coffin Joe is dead. He died, you know. But I think the films are, they are, they still, to me, I can't point out what his position is, you know, I mean, in terms of religion or in terms of morals, really. And I think that is one of the beauties of the film. A lot of people see different things in that.
Yeah, the end of the second film, it just feels very tacked on. Was that censored?
Yes. Not only was censored, it was written by the censor. In our book, when we went to Brasília, the capital of Brazil, and we went to the archives of the censorship board, and we found the whole in these archives, you can find the whole process. You know, you can find the documents when the filmmaker first asked. This was the process. This is how the process went. Just to explain, you know, you had a film. You had to show your film to the censorship board. So you went there to Brasília, the city cap, the country capital, with your film under your arm, and you showed it personally to some censors. And the censors would tell you, no, this film can't be shown. And then you'd have to, they would give you a document with all the cuts you had to do in your film. Then you had to go back, cut your film, and then send it back to the capital so they would watch it again. You know? And Mujica and his producers were doing that all throughout the 60s. And these documents, you know, the letters that went back and forth between the filmmakers and the censorship board, they're still there at the National Archives. And we found them for most of Mujica's films. And this film that you're mentioning is This Night of Possessor Corpse. It's the second one. And the original ending, Coffin Joe was supposed to defeat everyone and live. And then the censor told Mujica what he should write in the end. And we've actually found the guy's letter, you know, handwritten by him with the text, with the dialogue that Coffin Joe had to say. So Mujica had actually to go back to the studio and shoot another afternoon with this scene. You know, and add to the end this really tacky ending. You know, it has it's nothing to do with the rest of the film. You know, people were so used to that at the time in Brazil that audiences were kind of laughing. They knew already what was happening. You know, and one thing that I find fascinating is that Mujica never thought his films would be seen 40 years after that. You know, he was just doing this because he needed to make a living. You know, I mean, if the guy told him to change his films, I mean, he was a very poor guy. He couldn't afford to say, okay, I'm going to do another film and screw you and I'm not going to show this film, you know. So he had to actually comply to all the changes, which is just atrocious, you know. I mean, some of his films were cut by 15, 20 minutes and whole endings were never shown in Brazilian theaters. But at the time, the audience were kind of used to that. Unfortunately, you know.
In the second film, This Night of Possessor Corpse, he adds a lot more, like, stunts, I guess you would say, with snakes and spiders and that.
Sure.
And yeah. He became kind of legendary, I understand, for sort of an audition process that he would have with actors with these things. Can you kind of explain what he used to do?
Yes. In the first film, At Midnight I'll Take Your Soul, as I said, he shot in 13 days and with 100 or 110 minutes of negative. I can't remember exactly how much, but it was a very poor production. But the film was a huge success. So there was a producer called Augusto Cervantes, like the writer, and he really liked Mujica, and he saw the commercial possibilities of doing a sequence. So he invested some money in the sequence. And Mujica had some more money to work with, and he had a better studio, which was built inside a synagogue, an abandoned synagogue. But Mujica was always kind of a P.T. Barnum character, you know. He understood better than anyone I've ever known the importance of publicity and bad or good publicity. He didn't differentiate between them, you know. I mean, give me some publicity. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. So when he was shooting at This Night of Possessor Corpse, he had the idea of doing these bizarre auditions for actors. And he would do public auditions, basically anyone who wanted to work in the film could show up, and he would do the most atrocious things. You know, people would have to eat cockroaches or have snakes crawl on top of them or handle tarantulas or he would hang people upside down and have them drink liquor from a skull, you know, and it was bizarre. And he obviously called every newspaper in town, and he also called the police himself, you know, so the auditions were always stopped by the police, and this would give him huge press. You know, I have clippings from that time, and there were whole pages of photos of him putting tarantulas and scorpions and snakes on top of naked women. You know, it was a big scandal. So not only did, when the film was released, not only did he have a huge buildup in terms of journalistic interest, you know, but everyone in Brazil knew who he was, because he'd been arrested 3 or 4 times for doing these tests, and he was kind of like the Brazilian boogeyman, you know. He was a very, very smart and savvy guy, you know. And the film, you're right, I mean, the film has a lot of snakes and spiders, and they're all real, you know. And he used that to his advantage and to publicize the film, which was really good for him, because right after this, he received an invitation to do a TV show, and he actually did the auditions live on Brazilian TV. He actually buried a guy alive on Brazilian TV in 1967, which was one of the highlights one of the biggest ratings in the country at the time.
You said the reaction to his early films was rather huge at the time in the 60s. Why Sure. do you think that was? What was he sort of tapping into the zeitgeist of Brazil in that period?
Well, I think it was he was doing a horror violent film in Portuguese, which was really, really important. You have to remember, a lot of people in Brazil in the 60s couldn't read very well, you know, and some of the films that were shown were dubbed, but most of them were subtitled. So in poor small cities or small neighborhoods in São Paulo, for instance, where he lived, a huge part of the population was illiterate. They couldn't understand subtitles, you know. So the fact that you had a Brazilian film spoken in Portuguese that was so shocking and had nude women and violence, and it was appealing to everyone, you know, and it was so much different from the Brazilian films at the time, which all dealt with social issues and were kind of like nice family-oriented films. I think that is why it was such a success, you know, because people could understand a character, and they also, Mujica tapped also into the mysticism, which was a real huge part, was and is, but was at the time much more in Brazilian life, a part of Brazilian life, you know. I mean, São Paulo especially is a city made of immigrants. In every neighborhood, you have 4, 5, 6 different kinds of people. You have, in where Mujica lived, you had Lithuanians, you had Romanians, you had Polish, Russians, and people from Germany. And then in the neighborhood right close to him, you had an African neighborhood, you know. And each one of these ethnic groups brought their folklore and their culture. And so São Paulo was a huge mix of creeds, was a huge mix of different people from all over the world. It was a very, very religious and mystical place. You know, you had Macumba and Voodoo priests at the same, close to Catholic churches, to Orthodox Greek churches, to Lutheran churches. It was a very mixed culture. And I think that character of Cock and Joe taps into this mysticism, you know, all this. He is kind of like a boogeyman creature, but he is always appealing to that sense of supernatural, and I think that struck a chord with audiences at the time. You know, people were really, really frightened by him, and actually repelled and attracted by him at the same time, you know, which is why I think the films were such hits.
So the third film in the trilogy came out just a few years ago. Why did it take so long for that whole cycle to complete?
Well, Moshika did two films. And Midnight Undertaker's Soul came out in 64. And at Midnight, this Night of Possessor Corpse was shot in 66, released in 67. Moshika wanted to do the sequel right away, but he was, before that, he worked in two other films, Strange World of Coffin Joe, which is an episode film, amazing episode film, three episodes, horror film in 1968. And then in the end of 68, he shot that film that I told you about called Ritual of the Sadists. Then he changed, which later had the title changed to Awakening of the Beast. What happened was that in 1969, this film, Awakening of the Beast, was censored. Not only censored, it was banned, which was different, you know? I mean, until then, until 1969, every film by Mujica was shown with some cuts. This film was banned. I mean, he couldn't show it at all, not one second of it, you know? So he had not only put his personal money to help finance it, but he lost a lot of money. The producer lost a lot of money. And worse than that, he couldn't get hired again to do a horror film because nobody wanted to put money into a horror film by a director who had a film that was just banned, you know. So after 1969, he started having financial problems and he couldn't get financing for any of his films. So any of his horror films. So what he did was he started doing westerns for hire, he did adventure films, he did sex films, and he kind of was hired by a lot of producers because he was a very good filmmaker, you know. He shot films with phony names, you know, under nicknames, and just so people wouldn't know that it was a film by the same guy who was banned, you know. And he started having a lot of personal problems, too, because he got really depressed because he couldn't do his own films, so he started drinking a lot. He had a heart attack in 1974, almost killed him. And his films dropped in quality. You know, some of them from the 70s, I personally like them, but you can't really say that they have the same level of enthusiasm and creativity as the ones he did from 64 to 69. So I think that his career was cut short by the censorship board, and he was kind of condemned to do these films that got worse and worse throughout the years, and he could never get financing for a horror film again. Even the films he did in the end of the 70s when the military dictatorship was a little bit lighter, I mean, he couldn't put everything that he wanted to put in a film because they would be banned, you know. Censorship only ended really in Brazil in like around 82. When that came along in 82, he was doing hardcore sex films. You know, he didn't have a career anymore. He was kind of a forgotten and ridiculed figure in Brazil. This is when I met him in 86. People literally didn't know if he was alive or not. He was considered a has-been. A lot of people didn't even know if he was alive, you know. People just didn't care about him. It was kind of considered a joke. You couldn't find his films anywhere. He was doing the worst kind of explicit hardcore films with animals, and it was just depressing, you know. Just and then, but nobody knew at the time that it was funny. I mean, people who had seen the films in the 60s. Some people knew that he was a great filmmaker, but to most of the country, he was considered kind of a joke. You know, he was doing, appearing as Coffin Joe in circuses or in amusement parks, being ridiculed, and it was a really, really bad time for him. And luckily, I was able to help him get the films released in the U.S. in video, you know, Something Weird Video. Mike Verini's company did a great job. In the beginning of the 90s, put the films out, and I think that not only made Mujica respected and very, very adored filmmaker, but it actually kind of saved his life too. I'm pretty sure of that. You know, I think he wouldn't be able to survive another 5 or 10 years of that, the kind of life he was living in the end of the 80s, you know. So the films, the release of the films in the U.S. in the beginning of the 90s rejuvenated him and helped him gain self-respect back, and it was probably the best thing that ever happened to him, I'm pretty sure.
The third film just came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
Is it just out of all of that resurgence? I mean, is that really what it was, that he had this festival thing and then he got respect overseas and then people said, hey, you know, we actually have a treasure here that we didn't know?
Well, it took after he got recognition again, it took 15 years for him to do the film, you know. I mean, his films were released in the U.S. in the beginning of the 90s, and then it slowly started to creep into Brazilian cult society that, hey, we have a filmmaker here that is respected by a lot of people overseas, and we're kind of ridiculing this guy, you know. And it was amazing to see the articles about Mojica's films being released in the U.S., Europe, where you couldn't even find the films in Brazil. You know, it was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, they traveled to him to New York and to California, we went to Paris and Argentina and Italy and Portugal and South Korea. And you'd see huge lines for his films, and you couldn't see any of his films in Brazil, you know. And then very slowly, I think the Brazilian audience, especially the young guys, young people, started to get convinced, you know, and started to think, hey, we have this guy here. He's probably pretty interesting. If all these filmmakers and all these movie critics and all these fans are saying that this guy is great, we should have some quality, you know. So his films were kind of rediscovered in Brazil after that. But it's still to this day something that is very curious. Mojica himself, and the character of Coffin Joe, is much more famous than Mojica the filmmaker. I mean, everyone in Brazil knows who he is, but not a lot of people know that he does films or he's a really good filmmaker. They consider him kind of like a cult figure, a funny guy who appears on TV, dresses weird, but a lot of people don't know his films, which is okay, because films were done 40 years ago and nobody is obligated to know them, but it is a very curious situation with him. But what happened with the third film is that one of his biggest fans is Denison Amari, a filmmaker, and Denison battled for a long time, I guess 4 or 5 years, to put his film together, because he wanted to co-direct the film with Mojica and write the film, and the film finally came through maybe 3 or 4 years ago, called Brazil is called Encarnação do Demônio, and I think Europe and the U.S. is embodiment of evil, you know. And I like the film very much, although I think it was very risky for the producers to put that film out, because it is way too violent for audiences nowadays. And it was a commercial flop in Brazil. You know, very few people watched it because the movie theater simply didn't want to show the film. You know, it was probably one of the few films in the world that had this trailer banned. You know, banned, but not by censorship board, but by the censorship of good taste, let's say. You know, of what people consider good taste. You know, a lot of movie theaters wouldn't even carry the trailer. You know. And the film opened in, I don't know, very, very, very little opening, very small number of theaters, and it got very good reviews, but nobody watched it, you know, which is a shame, because I personally think it's very, very different from the other Coffin Joe films, but I still think it's a very efficient and good horror film.
Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't think it was that intense. I mean, if I think it plays into where a lot of modern horror is. I don't see it out of place with things like maybe Saw or even like Hostel. To me, it's on that same level where sort of modern horror audiences are used to a certain level of gore and things like that. And I didn't think it was that over the top in that way.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The thing is that these films, they do very well with Saw or what is the name of that one? Wreck, right? There's that other Spanish film too. And I absolutely agree with you. The problem is that these films, they do very well in Brazil with very young audience, 16, 17 year olds. Mojica's film was banned for, had an 18-year-old rating, so kids could watch it. And it didn't have one single famous, besides Mojica, actor in the film, so that hurt the film a lot, too. It was kind of, it was released as a cult film, it should have gotten a wider release. And at the time, I remember very well going to a reading of the script with Danny So and everyone, and when they asked my opinion, I said, well, I really love the script, but I would strongly suggest you guys do a version that is not as hardcore to, because otherwise you're going to have a lot of problems getting into multiplexes in Brazil, and that actually really happened, which was a shame.
Looking across all of his films, I mean, obviously you wrote the book, you did the documentary. He said that he's very intuitive, so you don't think he's trying to do certain things. But from your sort of analysis, what do you see as his themes, maybe ideas that he keeps bringing up or he's trying to get across to audiences?
The main theme of every one of his films is individuality. I think that all his characters, they are unique personalities. And that is amazing to me. Even in the films that don't have Coffin and Joe, you get a film like The End of Man, which has kind of a hippie character, kind of like a cult Jim Jones kind of figure who wanders through town giving sermons, preaching as Jesus and dressed up as kind of an Indian magician, with a turban. And he's a very weird character, but he is also he's always telling people to think for themselves and to be who they are and not follow anyone. I think his films are all about being yourself and not falling prey to talks of other people or to ideas that are imposed on you. I think that's amazing. I mean, even in his westerns or like that, they have kind of the existential hero. Every one of his films has one of those. And I think maybe because he himself, Mojica, always did things by himself. I mean, he never had an agent, never had a producer who worked with him full-time and who kind of coached him. And he was always his own boss, and I think that is one of the things that I most admire about him. He's a true unique individual in everything he did. It's a really good question. I've never thought about that, but if I had to say, I would say this, it's the triumph of individuality.
In the beginning, you talked about his talk show. That's what he's doing right now. Do you think there'll ever be a reappearance of him doing a film or a bigger project in that way?
Well, I sold the rights to my book for a Brazilian production company, and I wrote the screenplay for the adaptation of my book into a film. And we have been for the last 2 years trying to get funds for this film, which is supposedly going to be called Coffin Joe. It's an adaptation of our book. So there's this really famous Brazilian actor called Matheus Nachtergali. He's kind of like the Brazilian, he's the best actor in Brazil right now. He's, maybe the Brazilian Robert De Niro, only he's younger than Robert De Niro and not as good looking. But he is an amazing actor. And he agreed to play Mojica, And the idea is to do a film kind of like what Tim Burton did to Ed Wood, concentrating on 4 or 5 years of the guy's life. you know. So our idea is to do a film about the years between 1964 and 1969, where he peaked, where he became kind of like a total iconic figure in Brazil. You know, you have to remember in the 60s, he had a TV show. He had his own comic book. He had a radio show. He had his brand of deodorants and shampoos and nail polishers. You know, he was kind of like, he was everywhere. You know, he had clothing. He had a coffin company called Coffin Joe Coffins. You know, you could buy your own Coffin Joe coffin, you know. He was kind of like horror Mickey Mouse in the 60s, if you will, you know. And we want to explore that. And Mujica is going to play one of the censors in his own film, you know. So it's going to be really, really funny. I mean, he's going to play the guy who actually destroyed his own career. And if everything goes well, we plan to shoot it in about a year, year and a half. So let's see how that goes. In terms of another Coffin Joe film, I honestly don't know. I mean, he's 76 years old now, and I think, I don't know if he has the stamina to direct another one of the Coffin Joe films. I would love a production company in the U.S. to come up with a small budget and have him shoot on video and do it really quick, you know, like he used to do it in the old times. But the way the Brazilian movie production system nowadays works, you literally don't take less than 5 years to do a film. You know, because the bureaucracy is gigantic. The budgets are really big because everything is unionized nowadays. And all the production companies are associated with companies that do commercials, TV commercials. So the prices skyrocketed, you know, production prices. So the whole production system in Brazil right now is a mess. And it is something that takes away a lot of the energy from all filmmakers, you know. So I really, if he had to wait another 5 years to do a film, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't happen.
Muitos se encontraram com ela por sua causa. Agora chegou a hora de conhecê-la.
Welcome back to the Projection Booth. It was great talking to Andre Barzinski, obviously a huge fan of Coffin Joe and also a very good friend of his. Also, by the way, he's currently working on the latest season of José Mujica Marin's talk show, and we'll post a link to that and you can check it out. It probably helps if you know Portuguese, because you'll have trouble figuring out what the hell he's saying if you don't. You might be able to figure it out like me through like 3 years of bad high school Spanish.
Yeah, there is that kind of it's blurry, you know. There is that blur of Brazilian Portuguese and Spanish, Mexican Spanish, I guess, is what I was taught. But yeah, I can understand them here and there, but definitely not all the way through. And also, they speak pretty darn fast.
You know, in the interview with Andre, it was kind of interesting that he talks about Mujica and how basically a lot of his stuff is very instinctual. That he grew up in this theater, his dad was running the theater, he's not a very educated man, but he can't kind of tell you where these ideas come from, they just kind of come to him. And I think it was kind of interesting, the idea that he's sort of this primitive filmmaker, in a way, doing kind of primitive work, which kind of goes back to the idea of maybe like other exploitation filmmakers who we might know.
Yeah, I can't remember where I read it, and I wish I could, because it was such a perfect quote, that the films of Coffin Joe reminded at least one writer of Jodorowsky ideas on a Herschel Gordon Lewis budget. And that really kind of speaks to me as far as what kind of stuff we have going on here, because Jodorowsky is so... God, it's almost like he's thinking too much about stuff. And you've got very much the same kind of stuff with Coffin Joe. There are just so many ideas going on here, but he just doesn't have the budget to bring it all to the table. But it's almost better that way. I think it's almost better that he it doesn't have these huge budgets and that he has to struggle to get his message across. And I appreciate that. And it is funny, too, that he did kind of, you know, pick up the language of filmmaking from other filmmakers rather than doing this kind of formal training, because it does remind me of a lot of other people. Like in a few months here, we're going to be talking about Shuji Terayama and his movies. And it was very much the same thing. He grew up with an uncle at a movie theater. So he kind of he was steeped in cinema as well.
The person that this relates to me when I watch his films, when I watch Mushika's films, is the guy that I'm a huge fan of, always have been a huge fan of, is Luis Buñuel. That there's this religious aspect, there's this surrealism aspect, there are these ideas, but when you read about Buñuel, he's just like, there are no ideas in my films. Like, he's like, I'm not trying to make profound statements with all this stuff. It's just things that kind of pop into my head that I think are really interesting, that for me are interesting. And then people seem to like go, oh, well, this means this and this means that. And it's kind of the same thing when you read stuff about Mujica as well. And you hear about him, is that he's sort of the same way. He's just like, well, I wanted to tell this story. And then I just like these ideas or these images next to each other. And they kind of, if they make a statement to you, then they make a statement to you, I guess.
Right. Yeah. There is no real artifice to his films. He's not one of these, you know, I am making art when it comes to this. And that's another great thing about, you know, this kind of primitivism in filmmaking, as you were talking about. There really isn't this, you know, somebody taking themselves so seriously, you know, that does. I mean, I suppose Jodorowsky does take himself a little too seriously at times. But then somebody like Herschel Gordon Lewis or John Waters is just like, I wanted to make movies, you know, or Lewis will be like, I needed to make money. So I figured that this is the best way to do it. But yet you can bring a lot of stuff to his films and look at them in these interesting ways. And it wasn't just, you know, it's sure, yeah, he wanted to make a couple bucks along the way, but, you know, other people can look at his films and read more into it, which I always appreciate.
The thing that I really liked about his work is that, and I'm going to go beyond the trilogy here, I'm going to go beyond the three direct Coffin Joe movies, is that there are other films that he has done. As I said, I saw a lot of these on Something Weird, and I don't believe they've been released, as far as I know, on DVD or any other format in the U.S. beyond what Something Weird had done in the 90s or early 2000s. Awakening of the Beast is really interesting, and much like what he does with this series, where he's breaking the fourth wall and he's doing all these different ideas that are very inventive in terms of structure, Awakening of the Beast, I would say, is probably like the first postmodern horror film. Like, I can't seem to figure out another filmmaker that by 1967, 68, 69 was making a film that not only included himself as a character, but also included himself as himself and commenting back and forth in that way. What I mean by that is sort of like what they do in New Nightmare, which was the first time I remember when I was in high school and I saw New Nightmare. I thought that was revolutionary, where you have Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger, but you have Robert Englund as Robert Englund in the film. And there's this thing where there's the character, there's the actor, and then there's this sort of like difference between where the film world and the real world kind of overlap. And in Awakening of the Beast, it's a similar thing where the film deals with, at the time, because LSD and drugs, as Andre was talking about in the interview, was really kind of coming into its own. There's this thing about LSD research, and the doctor is giving people LSD, you know, maybe like Tim Leary kind of thing, and sort of studying how people react. And basically what he does is he finds that Coffin Joe, just having people injected with saline solution and looking at a poster of Coffin Joe, is just as hallucinatory to them as taking LSD. So there's this whole thing in Awakening of the Beast that's really interesting. It's sort of this, you know, the character versus, you know, Mujica as himself in certain parts. Other films of his that I really like during this period, a little bit later, Hellish Flesh is really good. That one's worth seeing. I love the Portuguese-Brazilian title, Carne Inferno. That's just a great title.
I just had that last night at El Patio,
exactly,
by the way.
Exactly, Carne Inferno. Yes, we've had that. Finis Humanus, which is The End of Man. That one's really interesting. He's sort of this cult leader kind of guy. He wears like a turban, and he like comes to town, and there's this whole sort of thing with like religious cults and stuff like that. The one that's really interesting, and I actually have a poster for this. I'm lucky to have two posters, thanks to the folks at Something Weird back in the day. I wrote them and
asked him if there were any posters laying around, and was able to get an Awakening of the Beast poster. And then also Hallucinations of a Deranged Mind. Hallucinations of a Deranged Mind is probably the most crazy Coffin Joe related film you'll see. He's in it as a character, but the film basically is comprised of all of these censored bits from his movies over the years that the government made him pull out. And he tries to find a way to weave them together into this weird narrative. The one image that keeps coming up over and over again in my head from Hallucinations of a Deranged Mind is he had this thing where he had people bent over and he drew like faces on their asses. And there's like a whole like thing where it's like, I guess their legs are draped in black and there are these like ass faces that are like together. And they're, I can't even remember what it is that it is, but it's just like this strange kind of freak out scene. And I'm just like, ass faces? I don't know. So that's a really interesting thing with Hallucinations of a Deranged Mind. It's, all of his stuff is really worth seeing. There's also the Black Exorcism of Coffin Joe. There's The Strange World of Coffin Joe. So there are Coffin Joe related films, but they're not related to the overall arc of these three films. Have you had a chance to see any of these? Are there any other ones outside of the Coffin Joe trilogy that you've had a chance to see?
Just Awakening of the Beast, just because the scenes that are inside of Brzezinski's documentary are so incredible. It's just like, what is this? I have to see this. So I had to track that one down. But yeah, otherwise, I mean, I've been looking for the one I've been looking for the one that they talk a lot about in the documentary, the one with the woman and the dog, but I haven't seen that one yet. So one of these days, maybe I'll be able to track down a copy of that.
Yeah, a lot of his porn stuff kind of went over the cliff as it went further on. They did have bestiality at one point and stuff like that. So he's not too proud of that stuff nowadays, obviously. And I don't really think that any of that stuff has been released by Something Weird in any particular way here. At least I haven't seen it. Like I said, there is Awakening of the Beast. There is Hallucinations of Deranged Mind. There is The End of Man, Hellish Flesh, The Black Exorcism of Coffin Joe, The Strange World of Coffin Joe. All of those you can find on VHS. I know that those are out there somewhere. Or if you have a good video store like Thomas Video, that's where I saw them because I was working there at the time when I started watching them. As for the documentary is really good. It's called Coffin Joe, The Strange World of Jose Mojica Marins. And it's kind of a companion piece in a way to the book that Andre and his partner in the documentary wrote called, the Portuguese title is Maldito, which means either sick man or the damned, depending on which way you want to translate that. And it is about 400 pages. And I'm lucky enough to have a copy of it. But as I said, you know, I'm able to translate like every fourth word through really bad 3 years of high school Spanish. So I'm currently trying to see if I can find a way, as we've talked with Andre before, about trying to get that book published here in the States, translated and published here in the States. So if anyone's listening, you're a big Coffin Joe fan and you know a publisher, please let us know.
Yeah, this seems like it would be ideal for somebody like a Fab Press or, I don't know, Fab Press is the first one that comes to mind. I think that would be just ideal.
As for the documentary, you said you saw it at Maryland?
Yeah, at the Maryland Film Festival quite a few years ago, yeah. So that was nice. Got to see it up on the big screen. And then they actually did a drive-in double feature of the first two Coffin Joe films. So that was really nice. That was a good year for Maryland Film Festival because not only did they do that, that was the year that Herschel Gordon Lewis, I believe, was in town and he was there. And then they also did The World's Greatest Sinner and The American Astronaut. So it's just pretty much all of these films that we've talked about on the show. So definitely it was a great year for any kind of film fan.
If you were going to give your recommendation on this trilogy of films to folks, what would you say?
Yeah, hell yeah. There's no doubt at all. I mean, not only, you know, you've got the cultural significance of, you know, this guy who became this huge thing. I mean, I love in the documentary too, where you get to see him, you know, like meeting and greeting all the, you know, the hoi polloi in Europe and all this. I mean, it was a huge influence and yada, yada, yada. But more than that, it's just the films themselves, I think, are just absolutely fun. I mean, I revel every time I watch one of these things. how much fun it is and how great it is to see these films and just this kind of voice in the wilderness kind of thing, making these great, just singular visions of one artist. And I just really enjoy them. So yeah, definitely. These are not just something that you should check out. They are things that you have to check out.
And I would say that, you know, I have to thank Sepultura for bringing them yeah. onto the highlight reel of my good friend Troy Gregory, who then told me about them. So it's like, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't know. And then also, they were kind enough to even put him in one of his video, in one of their videos. So I mean, these guys who went from Brazil to beyond in terms of in the rock and metal genre have been able to push his work out there, a fellow Brazilian like him, like themselves.
Yeah, it's Sepultura, he definitely had a great relationship with them. He even, I think, gave them some of his fingernails, correct?
I think so, because he did cut them off, and he said he cut them off in the early 2000s because he had been growing them for over 40 years and they kind of gotten away.
Yeah, they're a little gross at times. That's the one thing. sometimes that's the most disturbing thing about a Coffin Joe film, is looking at those fingernails and just like, how does he, you know, do stuff with those nails? How could he eat French fries with those things?
How do you wipe?
Yeah. I wasn't going to go there, Rob, but I'm glad he did.
I'm sorry. That's just the first thought I have. You know, you don't want to end up with a perforated colon. That's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah. Since we're going down that road, let's just go ahead and go all the way. I mean, that was the whole point of having long fingernails, at least on women, was to show that you don't have to work and that you can grow these long fingernails because other people are going to do things for you, be it wiping or whatever. So that was the whole original idea of women with long fingernails. And so, yeah, he I guess to look at it another way, Coffin Joe, he don't have to work no more.
That's right. He's got Bruno and the gang to go out and get the women. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to take a break and play a preview for next week's show.
At long last, the movie you've been waiting for. A thrilling look at the history of our great nation.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the Confederate States of America.
Learn how we protected the noble institution of slavery.
A new generation of young people are excited now about owning Negroes.
Watch Subjugation at its finest and the master race rise to unprecedented heights.
So let's start with Jupiter and his family.
Versatility is the key with Jupiter. He's healthy, well-mannered, loyal, smart, but not uppity.
Oh, and what a litter of pickaninnies she's had. As with all SSN products, we can either break up Jupiter's family for you, or you can have them as a set. So let the bidding begin.
A quick trial was convened, and former President Lincoln was convicted of war crimes against the Southern nation.
Now I too am a Negro.
Introducing The Shackle, the revolutionary new way of servant monitoring. The Shackle will stand up to the most strenuous of escape attempts, perfect for children, and at the low, low price of $49.95.
Hitler proposed that America join with him in a final solution.
But he did create a provision allowing a small number of Jews to remain on the reservation here on Long Island.
Slavery, like nothing else, is what defines us as a people, as a nation. Amen.
That was a preview from next week's show, the pseudo-documentary, The Confederate States of America. Make sure to tune in when we talk about this film with writer-director Kevin Wilmot. I want to thank this week's guest, Andrei Berezinski, for joining us. You can learn more about his work and all of our episodes on our website over at projection-booth.com.
That's right. And make sure to stop by the Projection Booth website. Give us your feedback. Tell us what you like about the various episodes. And then also swing by iTunes. Make sure to give us a review and leave us some stars there because we really like that. Or we may have to come back from the grave and haunt you.
13th floor of a corporate tower, they created a gateway to a parallel universe.
So this is where I was born.
But when you open the door...
You think one of them units crawled up the extension cord and killed its maker?
Beware of what you let in. The 13th floor.
Hey, what'd you do to the world?
Turned it off.
Rated R.
Support for the Projection Booth podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio. Now podcast listeners can access the latest episodes of the Projection Booth and thousands of other podcasts on the go without downloading or syncing. Stitcher instantly delivers episodes of your favorite shows to your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio can be found in the iPhone and Android app stores or on the web at stitcher.com/booth.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Specializing in horror, cult, and other oddities on DVD and Blu-ray, Diabolik DVD has been owned and operated by the same fine folks for the last 10 years. They proudly feature in-demand titles by companies like Mondo Macabro, Synapse Films, Blue Underground, Arrow UK, Severin, and many others. Get prompt shipping to anywhere around the world and quick replies to your customer service questions. Follow them on Facebook and stop over at DiabolikDVD.com. Because you heard this on the Projection Booth podcast, take 10% off your $75 order today using the coupon code DiabolikDB10. That's DiabolikPB10. Visit DiabolikDVD.com today.